Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin on a rather miserable Sunday in October. Is it October or is it November already?
It's October, Lizzie.
October. And we are glad, as always, to be here for our own sanity and our own centering and our own healing. I currently have coronavirus, and so I'm a bit delirious, frankly, and so who knows what's going to come out of my mouth today. But I am expecting that this beautiful piece of poetry by Jack Riddle and Justin, your presence and our togetherness, is going to be supportive of me. And for anyone who's interested in my health, I'm also really okay. I got very mild symptoms, but one of them is slight brain fog. So you'll have to just bear with me in the realness of the place I'm in today. And also, most of the time I'm completely coherent, so it'll probably be fine. But thank you, Justin, for being with me in this state of kind of undoneness and slight randomness.
So welcome, Lizzie. Well, welcome to you, Lizzie, in this, in the midst of being unwell and the midst of being in randomness. And welcome to me and welcome to everyone. Thank you, all of you, for joining us. Such a delight to be here. Lizzie, I'm looking at you and speaking to you, but I'm sort of looking also through you and speaking to all of us who gather here. Thank you, everyone, for making this ongoing conversation something that's way, way bigger, Lizzie, than you and I. And I know I keep on meeting people who say, oh, I've been with you a lot in the last few weeks, and it turns out I haven't seen them, and it turns out it's because they've been listening here. And I know also that there's lots of people that we don't know directly who we get to be with and who get to be with us. So thank you all for being with us. I thought it would be worth saying this morning, if you know people who you think would benefit from this conversation, please tell them about it. There's hundreds of hours of wonderful sources and sometimes deep, sometimes playful conversation to jump into. They're all on the turningtowards.life website, and they're all in our Facebook group. And they're all on all the podcast places, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and everything. And they're all there with all the sources. So it's an amazing resource to introduce people to if, I suppose, if you feel like there's something that happens in this conversation of turning towards our lives that might support people. And we just added a feature to our website where you can put your email address in and each week get an email with the recording in and the source in and all of that. So if you want direct to your inbox, that's new as well. It's a wonderful thing to do to grow this community step by step, one by one. So I'm very excited to have brought this poem, Lizzie, this week. So we're going to do what we always do to any of you who are new to this conversation. We always start with a source. And this poem by Jack Riddle, which you can find in the notes to the podcast and on the website and all of those places. Actually, we know, I want to say thank you to Jack, but we also know about this poem from our friend Rosemary Wattola-Trummer, who used it as a source for one of her own poems, which is how I came to it, Lizzie. And before I even read it, and then you read it, Lizzie, I want to say one very small thing about it. I've said this to you hundreds of times before, Lizzie, and I've said it here many times. One of the things I know about myself, and it has been true for a long time, is that I have a body which carries a lot of fear, and it's very easy for me in response to the fear for the world to get very small and for me to feel very burdened and very, very serious, because fear goes that way. So I really wanted to find something this week that might make us laugh and discombobulate us. And I remembered that many, 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 many weeks ago, a couple of years ago at least, you and I sat, there was a Turning Towards Life where the poem was about trees, but what actually happened was that we ended up in hysterics because I was doing my part from a cupboard in the same room that you were in, and it was wild. So I thought it was time to find something that might evoke that kind of wild abandon and also sort of not really knowing ourselves. And so here's this poem. It's called Knowing You'll Never Be a Clown, which I think is often how I feel as well. It's by Jack Riddle. knowing you would never be a clown, but if you were, and if your grin were painted red as a Coke can, a fire engine, red as the Tabasco sauce you spilled on your mother's carpet, and if it lifted itself from the inside of one huge ear to the other, and if your nose were a ping pong ball, almost begging for a swipe, and if your feet slept within white shoes, 3 feet long and flapping, would you be able then to talk to everything you really want to talk to? The chickadees who come closer than your nieces, that piece of paper blown across your lawn, the rain, each nudge of green in your garden. And when you put on your coat, that UN of colours and scraps, that coat would make Joseph feel he'd folded himself into the pages of GQ, the one with shoulders rolling up to your cheeks with buttons the size of pancakes and a hem like the border of Czechoslovakia. Would you want to walk into church, quietly take your place with the choir, and just as the minister finishes the benediction, honk your horn? And when you put on your polka-dotted tie, wide as a summer afternoon, would you want to pin the squirting yellow daisy on your lapel, sit in the business meeting, and after the eyes have it, squeeze the rubber bulb in your pocket? Then again, maybe you would just stay home, listen to jazz, the blues, or some swing, open each of your cupboards, and talk about Tuesday, or the way the light falls across the counters. Invite Lou Jacobs, Emmett Kelly, Felix Adler, Otto Griebling, hell, the whole clown alley. Rent a calliope, a centre ring, one elephant, and get out the pies.
Knowing you'll never be a clown, but if you were, and if your grin were painted red as a Coke can, a fire engine, red as the Tabasco sauce you spilled on your mother's carpet, and if it lifted itself from the inside of one huge ear to the other, and if your nose were a ping pong ball, almost begging for a swipe, and if your feet slept within white shoes, 3 feet long and flapping, would you be able then to talk to everything you really wanted to talk to? The chickadees who came closer than your nieces, that piece of paper blown across your lawn, the rain, each nudge of green in your garden. And when you put on your coat, that UN of colours and scraps, that coat that would make Joseph feel he had folded himself into the pages of GQ, the one with the shoulders rolling up to your cheeks, with buttons the size of pancakes and a hem like the border of Czechoslovakia, would you want to walk into church, quietly take your place with the choir, and just as the minister finishes the benediction, honk your horn? And when you put on your polka-dotted tie, wide as a summer afternoon, would you want to pin the squirting yellow daisy on your lapel, sit in the business meeting, and after the eyes have it, squeeze the rubber bulb in your pocket? Then again, maybe you would just stay home, listen to jazz, the blues, or some swing, open each of your cupboards and talk about Tuesday, or the way the light falls across the counters, invite Lou Jacobs, Emmett Kelly, Felix Adler, Otto Griebling, hell, the whole clown alley, rent a calliope, or calliope, a centre ring, one elephant, and get out the pies.
Thank you, Lizzie. We were talking about this before, for anyone who doesn't know. We don't know how to pronounce it, calliope or calliope. It's one of those things that clowns use. We turn the handle and it's got organ pipes and music comes out. And Lou Jacobs, Emmett Kelly, Felix Adler, Otto Griebling are the whole clown alley. They are a bunch of famous pioneering clowns. So that might help with some understanding of the poem. Oh my goodness, Lizzie, I woke up feeling so desperate this morning out of terrible dreams. And I feel so joyful being with you and reading this poem with you, just right from the start. The first line, I have to say, just going, knowing you'll never be a clown, but if you were, just, it feels so, it's surprising to me that what I feel, maybe it shouldn't be surprising, but what I'm feeling right now in the light of this poem is both joyful and silly and really, really moved all at the same time. Like, relieved, I think, is also the word. We feel a deep sense of relief that it seems true. And I think that this poem by Jack Riddle really reminds, I wonder if this is, it's, to me, this is what this is for, is to remind us how central imagination and play is in human life. And that really, I heard this from someone, a teacher of mine, actually someone you've been learning with as well, Lizzie, got this on my computer monitor here. It says imagination is everything.
Mm-hmm.
To remember that there's a way in which, it's what I'm remembering now, there's a way in which we always live in imagination. When I'm feeling terrified, as I often do, there's also imagination, a lot of it.
Yeah.
So given that to really be a human is to be imagining all the time. Like being with you now, Lizzie, I know you so well in so many ways, and there's so much I can't know about you and could never know about you. And there's so much I have to imagine also in order to be here with you. Like so mm-hmm. much of my experience of being with me and with you is also imagination. I am loving this idea that we can entertain for ourselves possibilities that we know will actually, in a sort of most straightforward, factual, whatever that means, way, are never going to come back. I'm never going to be a circus clown. I can be pretty sure of that. There's a small chance, but I think it's unlikely that that's going to be what I'm going to take up. But I can really imagine my way into the body and world of what it would be. I can imagine what it would be, the one that really gets me, the one that actually really I could sort of, I want to go out into the garden and talk to the rain and each nudge of green, which is wild and mad and wonderful and true. Like, and it's also true that I've been in meetings where it would have been so wonderful if my seriousness could have been brought along with the possibility of squirting yellow daisy on my lapel in the middle of things. And the feeling of opening the kitchen cupboards and imagining inventing the whole clown alley, being with the whole clown alley in my kitchen, is so wildly liberating, and nothing has had to change apart from being with you in this conversation, imagining together, feeling your welcome to me and to this, and bringing Jack Griddle's words in. Like a whole vista is opening, and a whole different bodily sense is opening, and I feel like I can imagine things that I couldn't imagine before, all because we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really beautiful to hear this, and there's so many threads, I'm having to kind of select a thread to follow in what you've said. And I think the one thread is calling, is this, what if just as you're saying, that our response to fear, like an everyday kind of fearfulness, and I'm not saying like there's a noise downstairs and I'm scared, like that kind of fear, I'm saying like the kind of underlying state of being afraid that all of us can find ourselves in regularly, what if the response to that is this? And feeling that in your invitation of, you know, when I'm in that underlying frightened space that makes me so small and makes my thinking like that big and makes the possibilities like that big, I'm not saying that we would just kind of cover over it or something with having fun, but that we could be in it and let there be an imagining into other things too. I think this has been a big theme in the last few weeks, Justin, that we've been talking about, is the andness of life and the multitudinous of life. And this feels like another aspect of that, which is not to say my fearful part needs to go or something. It can be right here, but I'm bigger than that. I can include more of that simultaneously. I can feel frightened and have that part be attended to and be here. And maybe this part that we're inviting forth, it's like calling something of us forth that's in all of us, which is our playfulness and our... So when I'm imagining these clowns in all these different places, like the office and the garden and the house, it's an invitation into what's not broadly going on already in our culture. I'm just in this appreciation of clownness, of I mean, I don't know, there might be clown conventions, but it seems to me like they normally stick out like a sore thumb, because it's not what's normally happening. We're not all wildly playing all the time. We're not all being bonkers and, you know, finding that part of ourselves that's light and free and filled with humour. And so I'm feeling the multitudinousness invitation again of letting this imbue our fear or another part of us, our resentment, our finding things difficult in some way. What if this is also possible and also present? And it's like a way of letting the part of us that has us feel suffering, it might be something that the play could be brought to, and that they could be joined together so that they could both be here. So it's not, and for me, in my kind of evolution as a person, Justin, this would have been like a coping mechanism for me for lots of years. If I just be funny, if I just be entertaining, I don't really have to think about anything, and I don't have to be intimate, and I don't have to face anything, and I don't have to be in contact with anything. So I know that I've used this as a means of avoiding life. And this invitation is like a full circle invitation for me, because it's like bringing back something that's a gift rather than a way of pasting over stuff so that I don't have to deal with it.
Mm. Well, it was occurring to me, Lizzie, whilst you were talking, that the great clowns always are integrators. They always hold together sadness and joy, darkness and light. They're not cover overers. In fact, clowns, there's something that can be quite uncomfortable for many of us a lot of the time about clowns, because we get that they're sort of poking into something that we might prefer to stay away from. And the way you're talking about it is, gosh, it's... So anything when we hold just the one side of it can be a way of turning away from our own lives. So for you, it's been that, like I had just heard what you said, that at times in your life being jokey and funny and whatever had been a way of distancing, of coming out of intimacy. And for me, very often seriousness and earnestness have been the same.
Mm.
I can show myself to be serious and intelligent or something. I won't have to really face what's going on, and people will like me, you know, and I'll get, is a way of manipulating the world. I'll get what I want from the world, not all the other things that I don't want from the world. So we can all do that. We can all do that, like sort of the one-sided pushing away some parts and having another part come forward and going, that's me, that's my identity. And then what you're saying is that the possibility is this great big and that we could live in. And, One of the gifts that I'm feeling in here is, and it's coming to me from what you're saying, is it seems to me that the kind of joy and play that we can inhabit when we also realise how fragile our lives are and how they hang on a hair's breadth, you know, just being here, still being here today, and the people I love still being here today, and it can all change any moment. And part of that is desperate to feel. That's the fear part that I feel often. I often feel the desperate side of it. But it's also true to say, as we're here and we're reading these words and we're being together and we're talking, that I'm reminded, because I can feel it right now, is that when I hold that, there are parts of me that through the fear have also learned to stay and be, you know, stay in even though they're very afraid. And when they are joined by that which is joyful and playful, then it's not joy and play as a way of covering up how tender it is to be a person and how fragile it is to be a person, and how, my goodness, we just have no idea and we are so little in control of things. It's not a way of covering it up. It's also a way of rejoicing in the middle of it that we're here. And that's what I'm feeling in touch with. It's amazing to be here, and it's terrifying and extraordinary and joyful. And when I feel that way, I don't want to distract myself with with things to numb myself. I do want to go and get my, I do want to go into the garden and get my face to the ground and be close to the grass. And I do want to look into the eyes of my loved ones and my children and look at you and marvel that we can be here. I do. And I forget one side because of the particular configuration of my own inner system. It's really easy for me to hang out in one side and to forget and not yet welcome the other side. But yet here we are welcoming it in. And I want to leap about and put my clown legs on and really do how I feel. Because the other side is also true always.
Yeah. I'm just appreciating, Justin, your capacity to not hold on to a story that is there about yourself. Like what I hear you saying is that you have a tendency to be a certain way. And you're saying that that's true for you. And there's also something else that's quite opposite that's also true. And what a gift that is, that any of us might be that way. That we could be defenseless to the point where we can say, well, this is how I am, kind of normally and habitually. But it's only a story I'm telling about myself that has validity and is beautiful and all the kinds of things. And I'm not gonna say that's the only thing that's happening, because it constrains me and it doesn't allow me to see many, many other things. So I'm just really in appreciation of that in this moment, that we can say, yes, this is what I'm like. And I can imagine myself into other ways I am also, and that I could cultivate, or that maybe are there already. I just have to kind of uncover them a little bit. You know, maybe I secretly leap around like a clown, but I don't really show anyone it, but it's me anyway. And it feels really important that we can all loosen up the structures that we live inside of to welcome new parts, to welcome what's imaginable. And I think as well, I'm really moved by the kind of the energy of this clowning thing. Like there's the kind of personality part of, you know, are we using it to cover up and are we using it to liberate ourselves? And I love that question. But just the essence of it, the essence of this lightness and this humour and this wildness, just feels just generally important as well. Like it feels like it's got intelligence inside of it. If we didn't enter into it, we might never know the gifts of it, and the gifts are profound. There's something loosening, something liberating, something freeing, something that feels to me like it aligns us with some essential truth about who we are as beings, that we can have this, have access to this lightness and feel this lightness coming through us. And I often, you know, I often feel really curious about what on earth laughter is. What even is it? I mean, I am notorious for laughing a lot and being hysterical to the point where I think something's gonna have to happen because it's hurt so much. And in the moment, there's no reflecting going on. It's just a pure experience that all I can be is that, which is deeply amused by something. But something really, really present is going on. Like it's not I don't even know what it is. I genuinely don't know what it is, just as I don't know what sleep is. Like what the hell's going on when I'm sleeping, really? And what the hell's going on when I'm laughing? And laughter feels like it's some important kind of portal, a little understood portal into something. What I do know about it is it's refreshing and liberating and lifting and opening and expanding and lightening, and, you know, all words that are really, really important to a human person being in this body. So I'm loving the fact that we're valuing this and bringing it forth in our conversation, and that this is where your imagination is taking you today.
Laughter is it's also content free.
Yes.
You know, it's not filled with I wonder what that means. It's yeah. Simply is what it is. It's one of those forms of human expression, like crying, or it just is.
Yeah.
Sort of comes in before all of our stories in a way. And
yeah.
I feel lots of laughter in me as we're talking, and the other thing that's really striking me, Lizzie, I realized I wanted to talk about with you about authenticity in response to what you said, because the mistaken way that I think lots of us think about authenticity is, well, if I feel this way, this is the way I feel, so the authentic way to be is just to be this way. Like, I'm feeling afraid, so that's authentic. And I think I would go as far as to say it's true that I'm afraid, but it's also true that I'm many things.
Yeah.
And I could be many things. And so if what I'm trying to do is to get rid of my fear, then that seems to me that's a disintegrating move, a splitting apart move. But there's something that's really authentic in the sense of being an author, like making ourselves, which is to wonder about what's not been included mm-hmm. in this moment. Like you said, that is already here or could be cultivated right here, that would also be me and would also be actual. Yeah. And part of that is things like we're doing now, getting together with someone else and imagining and feeling our way into another world together. Part of it might be doing stuff like finding out what it's like. It's one of the invitations that I really feel from this Jack Riddle's poem, is that what if I dress differently? What if instead of saying, well, I dress this way because that's who I am, what if I say, well, I could also put on the UN coat of colours and straps and the big shoes and the, or some version of that, and find out what it's like to inhabit that. Or I could go and do clowning or improvising, or I could leap wildly around my living room with some music playing, or I could, I love this, listen to put on the jazz, open the cupboards and talk about Tuesday. But also that I could, that we have this amazing imaginative power. When we realize that what we're always in is a story about ourselves anyway, some kind of story, some kind of like account of who I am, that is also possible to imagine other identities that could be true, that could be true through practice, could be true just by experiment, could be true. And I could say, what if I come at this like a clown? What kind of world opens up? What kind of play opens up? What kind of joy opens up? What kind of contact with the darkness that's in the heart of things and the light that's also in the heart of things?
Mm-hmm.
That we can do that. And that can be a deeply, deeply genuine thing to do. And also that when we do it, it includes more of ourselves and it includes more of other people. Because I've been really feeling it this weekend. We've spent a weekend, after many, 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 many months of not really seeing very many people because of the pandemic, we've had a weekend of having some lovely friends around. And I can feel how to be generous and genuine with them requires something more than me just inhabiting the story about how afraid I am, because my body feels so, you know, that there's an act of allowing myself to be many ways that is generous towards other people and has also becomes possible from being with other people as well. If I can be around people who don't just see the, who'll see the afraid part, but will also go, and I know there's something else here and I welcome that too. And we can really do it for, just like Jack Riddle's doing it for us by bringing us words about clowns.
Yes. And Justin, I want to just point to this piece where he says, just as the minister finishes the benediction, would you honk your horn? And I suddenly just felt like, what, you know, the example that you just gave of you and being the way that you are and people knowing that there's other parts of you and more possibility to you than one thing. What a gift it is to be this person who honks the horn after the benediction, because that's present in every single person in the congregation. Like, it's an act of generosity to inhabit parts that aren't the ones that normally get inhabited, because they're existing in all of us anyway. And all it takes is one of us to give permission, which I kind of think why laughter sometimes is contagious. I was on the train once and there were these two girls and they obviously had too much to drink and something hilarious had happened between them. Anyway, they were sniggering away all the way from the beginning station to where, to near where I live. And then one of them got off and the other one carried on absolutely honking with laughter. So then I started laughing because I couldn't stop myself from laughing. And the whole carriage, and you know, we were commuters, like there was no connection between any of us. The whole carriage was absolutely wetting themselves laughing for about 10 minutes for the rest of the thing. And each time someone got off, they'd carry on and you could see their little shoulders struggling along as they were walking along. And it was like, you know, when I'm thinking of it now, it's like, it includes all of us. You know, the part of us that is leaning towards joy, which exists in every human being, got invited and welcomed. And then it was there. And there was no, as you said, there was no content. And so I think there's a deep kind of inclusivity about this. That when we find these parts of us that are light and joyful, it has a natural invitational field that emerges that gives others the permission to jump into that part of themselves. It's like a relief that someone's allowed me to kind of come into that part of myself, given it's not really the way the world is. It's not like an invited practice, like doing your work is, or being serious, going about your business is. You know, we're all so kind of into those ways of being. And you don't see people like honking with laughter in the street. And when you do, it's like, I'm there with you. You know, it's an inclusive something.
We, I was just really taken by everything you just said, but the one particular thing, that most of us live in a culture where joy is not considered one of the central virtues.
Mm.
Seriousness and earnestness and, you know, the hard reality of the world and all of that, and maybe distracting ourselves from that in superficial ways, but like deep belly laughing joy and the shining eyes that come with it is considered, it's easy to consider it as trivial,
yeah,
or a distraction or something. Which also made me wonder, you said, what if we could be the person who honks the horn at the end of the benediction, you know, who brings in joyfulness. But the other thing I thought about was, how about wondering what it would be to be the ones who, when somebody else honks the horn at the end of the benediction, we don't all go, oh, stop it, but go, oh my goodness, joyfulness, how welcome that is, joyfulness and playfulness. And that for many of us takes some holding the parts of us that worry about, will I fit in and how will I be judged and what will people think of me, holding them very, very lovingly, so that when they go, whoa, you can't do that, we can go, it's all right, little ones. Oh, what so glad we had this conversation today. And Lizzie, thank you. Thank you so much for joining in this conversation every week with such generosity and openness and playfulness and courage and all of that. Such a gift to be doing this with you. And thank you to everyone also for being with us. It's magic to do this. We've come to the end of our time, so I'm going to say goodbye and thank you, everyone, and we'll be here next week.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.